Hello, and welcome to the Book Club Haters Book Club,
a podcast where we discuss the books we love and otherwise. I'm Noor.
And I'm Tia, and Happy New Year.
Oh my God, it is. I keep forgetting that it's the new year.
How come you keep forgetting? Like, it's the only thing I can think about the past month, the past few weeks.
It feels like less, I don't know, it feels like a different new year than the previous new years. Whereas, like, last year, it felt like there was lots of, like, excitement overall. But this year, all around, people were just like, okay, here we go, I guess.
It's chiller.
Yeah, like, super chill. People are just like, yep, here's another year. 2020 continuing, I guess.
I was talking to some of my friends about how they spent Christmas and how it was super chill. And they're like, I'm not looking forward to Christmas this year because people are going to go all out once they get vaccinations and stuff. Mm. And I figured like it'd be the same if you're in Brunei with Raya, especially since COVID is just completely doesn't exist in the community.
Yeah. Like last year's Raya was so nice. It was just like a day or two, just like chilling.
Yeah.
Well, not chilling, but like I still had to work for family, but like, relatively low-key.
Not as intense.
Not as intense. And I think, like, throughout the year as well, like, with all of the social events being cut off, like, weddings weren't as big. But now they're just, like, starting to get bigger again.
Yeah. I really like Raya here last year because I literally only had one event as opposed to the year before where I had, like, five events. And those events, they prolong hours and hours, sometimes up to midnight. Oh. And then this time around, it wasn't. And also because like I'm more assured in myself, I gave myself permission to leave early from the event that I went to last year and went on a date instead.
Yeah, priorities, man.
I mean, the date wasn't priority. I just like wanted to fill my time.
No, prioritizing yourself.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, how's your reading the past in the turn of the year?
Sure, Tia, sure.
I don't know, man. I am so tired. I'm trying my best here.
I appreciate that. I actually haven't read much. I'm currently still reading one book called Stripped. And it's about a male stripper and an elementary school teacher getting together. And it's kind of cute.
Hello. It's cute.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It hasn't got to the hot parts yet, I guess.
How far in are you?
About 30, I would say, 30%.
The hot part should be coming soon, though.
Yeah, it should be. I'm waiting for it. But I had to take a pause to read our book club book for this month yesterday. So.
Right.
How is yours? But that's basically it.
Right. So I read. I read two books. One is our book club book, and one is Dead Blondes and Bad Mothers, Monstrosity, Patriarchy, and the Fear of Female Power by Sadie Doyle. I've spoken about Sadie Doyle in the podcast before, I think like 2 years ago, because she had another book called Trainwreck, The Woman We Love to Hate, Mock and Fear, which is about celebrity culture. And for Dead Blondes and Bad Mothers, I really... Of course, it's a feminist book, obviously. It's about a book about women and also how we chastise women for some stuff. And also how the kind of how we label women as monsters in fiction and in real life. It doesn't really take into account how the woman get there. Like, for instance, for serial killers and stuff, the media tend to spin and tend to blame the mother that the men end up that way. They try to look into the relationship that they had with their mom as opposed to looking into the relationship the men had with their father. And media tend to blame the mom instead of holding the man accountable for his actions. Yeah. And she talks a lot about motherhood and... what it is to mean to love their kids and being in heterosexual relationships, their husbands all the time. But the reality is that no human relationship is about love. But when we talk about mothers and what their role is, we expect moms to love their children all the time without acknowledging that human emotion is very complicated and it goes up and down. And we don't give permission for mothers to dislike their children even for a second and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. So I want to ask you what your thoughts are about true crime.
True crime?
Are you into it?
Not true crime books, no. But
podcasts?
I only like a few true crime. So yeah, I guess I like podcasts, true crime podcasts.
But you do? Oh my God, I didn't know this about you. Tell me why you're fascinated by it, because I don't understand it. I don't seek for it. But so many women are into true crime podcasts.
So true crime is usually... Okay, so like I listen to this podcast called Criminal, where they kind of discuss anything about the criminal world. Not necessarily about crimes or like the criminals who commit those crimes, but it could be somebody who is affected by the crime or who... investigated the crime or is like somewhat tangentially connected to the crime.
Okay.
One of them was about this woman who we found out throughout her story was that she was actually being stalked by her stepdad. Right. And she said that now as she's like grown up, she turns to true crime as like her hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained it as she gets that thrill of getting closure, of like knowing that the crime can be solved and there is justice.
So her crime was never solved? Is that what it was?
It was solved. And I guess like, but you know, for, she lived with that, like that fear of her being stalked for a very long time. It was like, it started since she was like a little girl. And it was up until she was an adult woman living outside of her parents' house that her stepdad was stalking her, but she didn't know it was the stepdad, you know?
Holy shit.
So in that sense, like, yeah, that's it for me too, where I'm like, there's a thrill of like knowing how it came to be and how it can be, how people can move on, I guess.
So one thing that Sadie Doyle, she had a whole chapter in the book regarding true crime as well as horror films, and how she said that horror films, when it first came out, it attracted men as a genre, kind of like how people view superhero films as a very man category, but it's actually quite balanced. But with horror, when the genre first came out in films, it was so targeted to men, but over time, it has been more popular amongst women in the past maybe 20 years or so.
Mm.
And part of the reason is because horror films, as well as true crime podcasts or any true crime content, has become, like, women are fascinated by it because it's become a warning. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's that too, right? Like knowing how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that they.
What can happen.
It's a warning. Yeah, it's a warning of what can happen in their life. And there are certain genres, she said, that men kind of crap on because, oh, it's so targeted to women, whatever, like kind of romance and stuff like that. And horror films have become, like true crime, not horror films per se, have become that genre where men don't really become as obsessive of it the way women are.
Yeah.
And it's because it is psychologically, women see it as a warning sign because, oh, that woman has experienced that. It means that there's a possibility that I might experience it. Which I thought was really interesting because I don't really care for true crime. I don't like horror films. And the fact that these media, even though when they're published and stuff like that, it's meant to be published in a very neutral way. It's still very much consumed by women. And overall, like, the book has, oh God, it's pretty heavy because it's so gory, and I didn't expect it to be really gory because it documents a lot of murder and vicious violence that is made on women and how they're often blamed for their own murder or the abuse that they have to go through. Mm. And I really enjoy it, but I am also in a stable mind to read it. There's like several like stories that she wrote, which is like about how men, the way, like basically serial killers over the history and stuff, like it became super detailed and just came slightly unexpected. Overall, I think she's a really good writer and she does acknowledge her privilege as well as acknowledging that gender is not binary, etc. It goes highly recommended if you really want to read something more about
women. It sounds really interesting. Yeah.
It is, yeah. And she writes in a very layman's way and quite approachable. She's a good writer overall. Absolutely, because it is a popular nonfiction line away.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool.
That is honestly the only book I read other than our thingies. But do you want to talk about your goal for this year, if you have a goal in terms of reading?
I actually don't have a goal. Yeah, I do actually want to talk about it. Like, I don't have a goal. Yeah. Last year, my goal was 100 books. And then like towards the end of the year, I just stopped documenting what I read. And like if I dropped it, whatever. And now I'm just like, I'm fine without tracking this stuff. So
yeah.
Do you have a goal though?
I don't. Like it didn't even occur to me to go to Goodreads and set what my goal for reading this year is. It was like I'm on my Goodreads for the first time, like on the webpage the first time today, and it's telling me like what's your reading goal for this year. And honestly, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't really care anymore. Yeah.
I think like maybe it's the shift in what we care about, like what we truly want to give also, our energy to.
Yeah, absolutely. But also I think the both of us have just become less ambitious over the past 2 years when it comes to having these arbitrary goals and stuff.
Yeah. We're just like, what makes me happy? And I'll just do that.
Yeah, of course. So what would you want to talk about then, other than...
Nada. Literally nada. Okay.
Yeah, as usual, we come unprepared.
No notes, no nothing.
No, absolutely not. Okay, then if that's the case, do you want to move on to question time?
Yeah, let's move on.
Yay.
Welcome to question time.
Hello.
Okay. Do you want me to start or do you want...
Oh my God. If you start first, that would be a miracle.
All right. Okay, yeah. I have a question. What is an unexpected thing that you like? Wow, I had it in my head, and then, like, the words came out, and I'm just like, what am I saying?
No, I feel like a lot of people have been doing this to me for the past 2 days. Okay, you can...
Hold on. Okay. What?
Rephrase it.
Rephrasing it.
Yeah.
What's an unexpected genre that you like?
What do you mean by unexpected?
That people may not expect you to like.
So, I don't know. I don't know if you even know this. I do like romance if I can find the right book.
No, I did not know that. But you haven't found the, like, well, you did, like, I know, the Kiss Quotient.
Yeah, I did.
The Bright Test. Yeah. Mm. Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Like, it's not a genre I will seek for.
Mm.
And I don't really know why, because as much as there are good books, there are also a lot of really bad books out there.
Mm.
And I still find it difficult to get over the kind of sexism that might happen in those kind of books, even if it's like small or minimum. And sometimes, like the books that you've read that you've recommended to me, I'm sure they're good, but like I can be very quickly dismissive of them. So for me, if I'm reading something, this would apply to like any book, to be honest, it has to grab me in the first few chapters. And I think a lot of romance books fail to do that with me, and I kind of have to read like a lot of them, a lot of the one book, like a lot of pages in the one book for me to eventually find something I like in it. So if like the first two chapters is like, ugh, I don't care, I don't like how this person talk, etc., I don't like how the narrative is written, I can just be very quickly dismissive and just move on to something else. But I do I like romance.
It's kind of similar to me too. But yeah.
Yeah, but we just the difference is that
standards, I would say. Yeah.
Probably, but also you know a lot more about it than I do. And again, like I don't seek for it. It's not something that I actively look for.
Yeah, it's for me, like it's comfort. And like when I go into the first chapter, I know what to expect. And and those things are usually in the first chapters of the romance book that I pick.
That's so interesting. Maybe that's the difference between us. I usually go into a book, I don't expect certain plot lines. Mm. I just read it and see if I enjoy it. And I guess like the way I read is more in the moment kind of way, whereas you know what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, yeah. There's this thing where in the romance novel community, I would say, like, of about the concept of the promise, of the premise, where...
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't remember now what the... Okay, so let's take the Kiss Quotient as an example, where the guy is a sex worker, and the hero is a sex worker, and the heroine is the heroine, you know? She seeks his services. The premise is that she seeks his services. The promise of the premise is that they will fall in love. And how is that he'll probably be teaching her something and she'll teach him something. And that's the attraction for readers to that book.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Mm.
So I guess but for me, I understand that. But yeah. I guess for people who aren't familiar with the genre, they'll be like, okay, what's happening?
Yeah, because like what I like about Kiss Quotient is the narrative, the main character, Michael, right?
Yeah, Michael.
His name? Yeah. Michael was such an attractive character from the beginning.
So sexy.
He was not a dick. And for me, a lot of the romance book that I read when I was younger was... that a lot of the men are just complete a-holes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Alpha holes. We have a term for them.
What is it again? Say that.
Alpha holes.
Alpha holes. Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like those were from the 80s, the 90s. They're still quite popular now, but there's a thing now where the beta hero, which I think Michael is, where they're quite... caring and emotional and like, you know, all that good stuff.
Right. Now that we're talking about this and thinking about the romance that I read when I was younger, I feel like maybe those romance has such an influence into my romantic life that if a guy is an asshole to me, I'm like, oh, it's fine, I can fix him or something, I don't know.
Oh, definitely. I was like, when I read a lot of Malay romance novels, and those are just those hit even closer to home because like they're so closely related to our culture, and you're like,
yeah,
this guy could be a person in my life, and you know, it's so possible. Whereas like if it's a Western book, they're a bit like fantastical.
Question.
It really had a formative influence on me.
So with Malay books with the alpha holes, do they eventually change, or do the woman have to just accept them for how they are?
They eventually change. The
not your psychologist, not your mom.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing about Malay romance that I learned over the years that I wasn't happy with, was that the woman has to, it's a project, you know, for the woman.
Yeah.
The man is a project for her to make him a good man. Or the woman is a project for the man where, you know, he makes her into, like, this more pious person. And, like,
my face just dropped when you said that.
It's a no from me right now. Like,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's why, like, the books that you have recommended me, like, I like, what was the last one, the romance one that about the three friends who got
Beginner's Luck,
who won the lottery. Yeah. And, like, I thought the main character, the guy, was asshole-ish. And that was the thing that I really couldn't. And he kind of was. Like, he wasn't a super asshole, but he was still, in a way, dickish in some aspects.
He was, like, so, yeah.
That was the thing that I knew you loved it, and I really wanted to understand why you loved it. But he was just such a massive turnoff for me. And I read, like, maybe around 60% of the book. Or 70%, and
but he was like, he, like, learned from his mistakes, though, like, from the first chapter.
I know, but that's the thing. I'm like, yeah, but despite that, there were still some aspects of him that I thought was dickish. I was just not into it.
That's fine.
I just don't like if I'm. I don't like.
Do you just like? I know we talk like 100% perfect men. I don't know.
No, I'm not seeking for perfection. I am. What am I? Wait, oh God, I had it on the tip of my tongue, but now I completely forgot what I was going to say. I think, because for so many years we've said stuff like, I hate men.
Uh-huh.
I just don't want to read more stuff where I have to hate men more.
It's just so interesting because, like, he isn't hateful, at least to me, but okay, yeah, different people.
Wait, sorry? It is hateful? What?
No, huh? I don't think that he is a hateful character, or even, like...
No, I'm just saying he's easy to hate.
Is he? For me. For you.
For me, anyway. Yeah. I just don't like men who are so disrespectful to women, even if it's a little bit.
Okay. He doesn't apologize. I don't know. I just understand. He did. This is Ben Tucker?
I don't know, maybe I came in reading the book thinking I want to hate this person. I don't know. Okay, I don't want to discuss about this anymore.
Sure.
You're probably right and I'm probably wrong, so
okay, do you have a question? Okay. For me.
Hey, I do have questions. It's on my phone and it's locked. My question for you is, has a book ever scared you or given you nightmares? Is this a sensitive question to ask?
No. I mean, like, no, as in, like, no, it's not a sensitive question to ask. But yes, a book has given me nightmares. I read Kelly Armstrong's Cainesville series. And in it, there was, like, basically this, the protagonist has visions of the future. In the very near future. And most of these visions are quite gory lah, and like very much like murders apa, and like it legit gave me nightmares. I don't even understand why, because like it's not like as if I have never read something like that, but it was just so scary to me. I don't know. And I had nightmares for like a week, I think, after reading the first one, and I'm just like, what the fuck.
What's the name of the book?
I think the first one is Omens.
Yeah. Okay.
Kelly Armstrong. Yeah. But usually they don't really give me nightmares.
Yeah.
Or maybe because I just don't read horror. I think if I read horror, I would definitely have nightmares because I'm scared of them.
Yeah. I don't really like reading horror or watching it.
Same.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm scared.
Yeah, but I also read a lot of YA that is supposedly about like premonitions and ghosts, etc. But they were not scary per se. They were more like entertaining for me.
Mm.
Yeah, but like the way people, like I have a few friends who like reading Stephen King. And
yeah, I don't get that at all.
Never in my mind, I would think, yeah, I want to pick up Stephen King voluntarily.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But, like, they really enjoy it. And they're women, and there are some elements of true crime in it.
Yeah, I just... it's weird to me because, like, I don't like the horror genre. I think because it's very... dramatic.
Because of the djinns.
But, like, if it's true crime, I'm all for it.
Mm.
Also, yeah,
I said because of the... Yeah.
If it's like a Malay thing or like anything like Islam related, and then there's like a horror about that, I'm just like, no, fuck that, no, right. That's too much.
Mm. But I do wonder for the Devabhat series, and when we were reading the part about Sobek, was that scary for you?
Oh my god, that was so scary.
Yeah. Because I am reminded by this because a few days ago, Shannon Chakraborty posted on her Instagram of somebody drawing their version of Sobek.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh god, it's even scarier than what I had in my mind.
I have little goosebumps. I'm so scared.
Yeah. Like, Sobek is such a fantastic character. I really, really did love that character.
Yeah.
But the description, the physical description, holy shit.
Oh, my God. You know, recently there's been lots of crocodiles coming onto land. And I was just like, no.
My brain. Is it because of the rain? Is it raining? Yeah, what's happening in Brunei?
Yeah, it's been raining really, really heavily. So there's been a few Anula crocodiles coming in to land, and like they're really huge, and I'm just I cannot imagine them being in the gutter next to my house or something. Oh my god, the terror.
Imagine the baby swimming up your toilet. I'm sorry.
I'm fine with the babies. It's they're
oh you're huge. Fine with the babies.
I'm fine with the babies.
Okay,
these are like adult ones, and they're huge, like literally so big. I just don't understand how they get that big.
Are you okay with biawaks? You are though, right?
I am.
Love biawaks. Yeah,
I have a fascination with them.
You do. I've been telling some of my friends here about how there's like 2 biawak on my street back in Brunei.
Uh-huh.
And every time I tell them, they're like, holy crap, that's amazing. That's not something, like, we have snakes here that are dangerous and stuff. But oh my God, you actually have a dragon.
Oh, a monitor. Yeah.
Yeah, it's monitor lizard, but it does kind of look like a dragon with no wings sometimes.
It does.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your answer.
Thank you for your question. Wow, you're so polite today, huh?
I'm trying to... maybe I'm trying to turn a new leaf for 2021.
Oh, gosh. You?
Bitch, please. Okay, we'll move on to our book club book.
Yay! Welcome to our book club. Today, we are talking about this... miraculous book that Thea has chosen. Thank you, Thea. It is like my excitement is like very palpable right now. It is The Magnolia Sword, A Ballad of Mulan by Sherry Thomas. Should we explain what the book is at least?
Yeah, you can go ahead and describe it. I mean, it's pretty
self-explanatory, right, from the title.
Yeah, if you know Mulan, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So this is a retelling of Mulan based on the original, what is it called? Original ballad, I would say. Is it?
Yeah, a Chinese lore, not a lore, it's a Chinese story about Mulan.
Mulan, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about our main character is Mulan. She has been trained all her life to participate in this duel, in this sword fighting duel with a rival family, sort of, in order to keep their heirloom sword and also to get the rival family's heirloom sword. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Which is a twin sword.
Twin sword. Woof! Super cool. It's like it's a wuxia... spin on Mulan, which I completely love. And I guess if people don't know what wuxia is, it's like it's martial arts, you know, those like old time Chinese dramas where they're still doing it right now, but like where people just like fly, you know.
This shit, dude, I used to really love watching those when I was a kid.
I fucking love them. I still love them.
Yeah,
I still love them. They're like,
I don't watch them anymore, but holy crap, now that you mention it, I'm like, I used to like be in front of the TV at 6 PM or yes. like watch RTM or something.
Yes.
They're so
yes.
good.
They're so good. They're so fun. Just like they're all spinning yeah. and like all the swords and flying and the mm. punching. Oh my God, it's amazing. So at the beginning yes. of the book, we see Mulan and she is like at dawn, sword out with this, with her opponent from the rival family. And she is like really worried about her fighting. And then like during her, when they're fighting, she not realizes, but she settles into the fight and kind of like enjoys it.
Mm.
And at the end, you know what he says? What he says? What does he say, Tia? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't have my ebook with me. I'm sorry.
Lord. Okay. So at the end...
we will meet again or something? I don't know.
He expresses regret that they were born all
right.
in that rivalry.
Yeah.
And like if in another lifetime, yeah. they could be ... friends.
Friends. you're so excited by this book. I love it.
I have been waiting to talk to you about this book for like 12 hours.
I know. You were like texting me the whole time I was out with my friends. I'm like, I don't know who to focus on tonight. Because on the one hand, I want to talk to my friends. So on the other hand, I also want to talk to you.
So, and then like, is it just a few days after? A few days after the... An edict comes down. Is it an edict? I don't even know. A conscription. So like all families have to produce one able-bodied male to fight mm-hmm. for the war.
Yeah.
And so...
Also...
Yeah.
Mulan actually has a twin brother who died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mulan.
Yeah, that's why. That's the main plot, and that's one of the main plot. Like, she has a twin brother who died, and then because having a daughter is shameful in that society, they've been disguising Mulan as the brother. Do you remember his name?
Muyang. No, it wasn't shameful.
It wasn't shameful. It was wasn't like
about shame. It was about like how... She, from her perspective, it was that
uh-huh.
her dad felt the loss of her brother so much that he decided for her to take his place.
Mm.
It wasn't that she, but, uh-huh. not that generally women are, you know, shameful.
Okay. But there's a plot twist at the end, but we'll talk about that later. If we ever get to it. Because okay. there's so much to talk about. Okay.
So much to talk about. So immediately, I think like when we think about like Mulan, I think of the Disney movie because I don't really know the history of the tale. Is that for you as well?
Oh, not anymore.
Not anymore. This has people, replaced it.
If people talk about Mulan, this is the book I'm going to talk about.
Yes, this is the book.
Yeah.
But before this book, it was definitely that about Mulan, about her trying to like protect her dad. And it's true. She is, in this book, she is trying to protect her dad and mm-hmm. Her household, where the only males of her household are her dad, which he's paralyzed from the waist down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's her little brother, who is still just a child, and
yeah.
a servant's son, who isn't mentally capable of the kinds mm-hmm. of the war would have to would require.
The demands of
yeah,
war.
Yeah, the demands of mm-hmm. war. So she goes to be recruited, I guess. Yeah. And she proves her martial arts prowess by catching two arrows and then
two and a half arrows.
Sorry.
Right.
Two and a half arrows. And she
becomes blindfolded.
Oh, she's such a badass. I love it so much. Like in the
yeah.
in the first chapter, you already get this like super cool sword fighting scene. And if you know me, yeah. I'm such a sucker for sword fights. Dear God. So she is recruited into the Duke's son's elite team.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And they go to the north to scout out for the enemy whereabouts and stuff like that. War stuff, basically.
Yes. And essentially, the story that surrounds Mulan, I mean, other than the fighting and shit like that, like, that's cool and all, is her relationship with the Duke's son, who eventually we find out his name is Kai.
I love Kai.
Like, when the plot of Kai came on, I was like, oh, shit, she's gonna love this.
I already knew, like, from the... Okay, I talked earlier about the promise of the premise, right? And
yeah.
Sherry Thomas is, she used to write romance novels. She, right now, I'm not sure, she also writes the Lady Sherlock series, which I love. And
yeah.
I'm not sure that's like categorically romance. I don't think that's romance, but it is, it has romance elements into it. And she really brings this into this book, and like I recognize it. It is as if she's like handing me a platter of my favorite food. The premise is that there's like two rival families. And then she meets this rival at dawn without anyone knowing, and I'm like, immediately, yes, they will fall in love.
Oh, wow! That didn't even pass my head at all.
It's a coded language, if you know the genre.
Yeah, interesting. Like, I came in like not knowing. Like, I honestly thought it was just gonna be a historical retelling of Mulan, and I was so drawn by the relationship between the two of them because, again, Kai is no asshole, so I really like him immediately, and he knows from the start that Mulan is actually Mulan, and it's not a man. And we find out later on it's because he saw her go into a room or something as a woman, and then the person leaving the room was a man. So, like, he didn't communicate that he knew it was her. And, like, I really like that sprinkling of how he just slowly fell in love with her.
I'm just like, this is all from the, you know, from all of my previous... I don't know, hold on. My previous experiences with, like, watching this kind of, like, this trope of, one, cross-dressing, two, road trip, three, solving a mystery. So it's all of this on, like, rival gangs, rival, like, and family members. All of this, I got it, you know?
I did not.
So for you, it was, like, a nice surprise. And for me, it was like, yes! Give me everything. And she really, really, really delivered. I'm like, I am the audience for this book. It is as if she wrote this book with me in front of her.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we say? Like, the landscape, like, the way she writes about the landscape is really nice. I really liked it. And it really reminded me of the manga that I like to read about, which is about like old historicals, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, right. Yeah. I think you mentioned this to me.
Yeah. Somehow I have lost the words, and I have all the words, but I have lost all the words. You know, like, what do I actually say?
Yeah.
What do I say?
I don't know. I actually do have some stuff to say, but it's not. Because I just thought there were some intricacies in it that I thought was really interesting, especially as somebody who is trying to come off as a man. So I do kumdo, which is Korean sword, and one of the things that me and some of the women classmates have been talking about the past few weeks is bras, and how we need, like, one of the difficulty that we have is our boobs are in the way.
Are they? How?
They really are. And for one thing, the way you hold your sword has to be really close to your body. Mm-hmm. And if you have big boobs, your hand, like your upper arm is just going to be, your boobs is going to create more space between the sword's hilt to your body.
Mm.
And therefore, when you're making cuts, like downward, upward, or upward, downward, you, for me anyway, as a middle ranking belt, I still have no idea how to angle it properly. And I was talking to one of the very senior women belt. I was like, I still don't know how to make swooshes, because that's basically the aim eventually is get your angle right, get your cut right, and then you get a swoosh. I'm like, I still don't know how to get swooshes. I've been doing this for a year. And she's like, it's because your boobs are in the way. And the fact that Mulan was talking about having to use compression bodice binding. On her, her binding on her chest. And I was like, oh, right. This is something I guess most women who does sword would have to face, that their boobs are in the way. And I really thought that was really funny, because we were literally talking about it like almost every class for the past few weeks. And we're actually going to have in a few weeks time, have somebody selling, like, it's basically MLM, but they sell bras. And somebody, one of our, my classmates said, her boobs are actually much bigger than we think, because she's found the best compression bra for her to do kumdo in.
Ooh. I mean, that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it sucks about the MLM part, but
yeah,
the bra part. Sounds great.
Yeah. So which, like, you know, the thing is that with a lot of traditional martial arts with weapons in East Asia, I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world, it's so accommodated to men that there's no way, for some reason, it's really hard for us whenever we ask our instructors who are men, how do we adjust because we have breasts in front of us? How do we adjust because we have hips that are bigger, wider? And they don't know what to answer most of the time.
Yeah.
And I can understand the struggle that Mulan had to go through, having to use the binding and et cetera. The struggle is real.
The struggle is real.
Yeah.
Can't get a swoosh with boobs.
I don't know if I'll ever get a swoosh with boobs.
I hope you will. I hope you will get your swoosh.
Let's hope. So one of the things that I really like about Mulan and her, I wouldn't say origin story, how this whole thing started in the book, is that she didn't run, she didn't have to run away and lie to her family. Like, her family knows what she's doing. It is a decision they all agreed on and they all respect. And they didn't even try stopping her. I much prefer that plot line than what the Disney Mulan is, which is like basically she's just running away and like her dad's just gutted. And I'm not saying like this Mulan's father is not gutted, because eventually we do find out that he
I cried.
Was heartbroken.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was heartbroken that she left. And then she, like you said earlier, Mulan thought that being her brother was preferable. And then it turns out her dad said, no, I, even though it was heartbreaking to see your brother died, it would be even more heartbreaking to not have you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh,
I that
again.
Scene.
Oh my God.
Like, I knew it was something like that was going to happen, but the reasoning behind it was so devastating to me to read. And I was just like,
I know, I know.
Loudly I was like, sobbing.
Oh, wow. I was like,
yeah.
Throughout the book, it was, when she was like thinking like, oh, like, I want to make my dad proud. I want my dad to acknowledge that I am Mulan. Like, my dad has never said my name. And I was like, no, I don't think that's the truth. And then like, but then like at the end, when we get that confession from her dad, and I was like, no.
Yeah, it was more devastating than what we thought it was gonna be. And the thing was that Sherry Thomas wrote that scene. I honestly think it's like the most powerful scene so out of the whole book. It was so beautiful. And she wrote it so, oh God, I don't know how she wrote it. It was just so powerful and so effective that it was just so heartbreaking to read.
Okay, so my perspective of this is oh wait, do you want to continue that first?
No, okay. You can go on.
So my perspective is that throughout the book, it is all about Mulan holding things in, right? About like how, like her not being able to speak with her dad about her feelings, about her brother, about her mother, and then about her. And then even when she's on the road and she writes the letter, she is like exceedingly formal. And then when she meets her dad for the first time, she kowtows, and it's like you know, barriers and barriers and barriers that Mulan brings up to protect herself, which, you know, is very understandable. And then for her dad to be the one to take those barriers down, just, like, set them aside and be like, you know, you are the pearl of my life or whatever.
Yeah. Like, oh, God. just thinking about it is pulling strings in my heart.
Oh, my God. Truly, just, like, such a masterclass in writing and how to, like,
yeah,
pull that tension from the beginning to the end, even though, like, she kind of realizes, like, she... She wanted her dad to be proud, but, like, in the end, she realized that she is proud of herself, and that matters too. But she also wants that acknowledgement and that validation from her dad, and that had never gone away until the end. And I'm just like, oh my God.
And also, like, one of the things I really like about her is that for a long time in the book, I think like maybe half the book, she tries to make a decision how a man would. And then there's this one time where Kai was going to leave her at the camp. Mostly, eventually we find out it's because he's very concerned of her safety and stuff. And she, for a long time, it wasn't even a long time. She made that decision pretty quickly. She had this thought process in her head where she has to listen to him because dad is expected to her, of her as a woman. And she had this whole chapter where she's weighing options, thinking as a man and as a woman, which I think is like a very good way of thinking, because it doesn't necessarily mean you're thinking in binaries. It also means that you're thinking at eventually finding a place where the decision you make is good for you and not necessarily what her brother in quotation marks would do. And she, as opposed to just being like, oh, I'll be an obedient soldier and stay here, she's like, hell nah, I'm gonna go and follow Kai.
Yeah, I'm gonna be loyal, and that's her values. And I really love road trip stories because of that. It is like the journey is not just on the road, it is within yourself.
Oh my God, shut the hell up. I love it. Anyway, so when are we going to talk about Kai?
Oh, when are we going to talk about Kai? Right fucking now.
Now,
we are.
Let's do now.
Who? Kai is my son. Like,
oh, he's so great because, like, because he knows the secret that she's a woman and he didn't want to let her on that he knows. He tried to have his guard up for like half the book, and I was like, oh God, just put the guard down already. And at that point I was like, I don't know if he knows or not. And every time he made a decision to not sleep in the royal room or whatever and sleep next to her, I was like melting.
Yeah. That is literally my favorite trope ever. Specific to this very genre itself.
Oh God, he's such a good character.
Other men by like sleeping next to you in this bed. Oh, even though I have my own room.
I know. I'm like, of all the reasons, which I'm like, what the hell?
It is literally like, you know, it's one of the pillars of this trope. Yeah, you cannot. Mm-hmm. If you have this trope, you cannot not use it. You know.
Right. Oh, it's wonderful. He's wonderful.
Yeah. I love that, like, instead of this guy who's, like, super fearless. And, like, in the beginning, I know that one of the other men, I think it was Kedangale, he said that Kai is one of the most bravest, like, the bravest man he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. And, like, and then as the book goes on, we learn that he's actually, like, quite frightful. He's frightened by a lot of things, including Mulan.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I like about him, that he's so vulnerable and he only shows that vulnerability to her.
Yeah.
And oh God, I love him so much. And like, eventually we found out that he's a massive smooth talker. Like I said, again, it's the whole guard up thing. And when the guard is completely down, like after the war, whatever, is over, and after the feud between the family is over, he just says these things that are like, ooh.
Ooh, right.
Yeah, oh, because like when he gave, I took a picture of this scene because I love it so much. When he gave the sword away to, who did he give it to? Is it? Basically the dad. Yeah, the sword was united. And then he said, if you wish the swords to be reunited, mother, perhaps you can see a way to arrange a match between me and Miss Hua. I'm like, Miss Hua here refers to Mulan. And it's just like so fucking smooth because he's so terrified of his mother. And he just like says this thing and basically stands his ground because they've been trying to find him a partner for so long. And now he's like, I found her. This is her.
And I completely love how, like, he actually told the emperor himself that he was like, I will not take a wife until Hua Mulan absolutely rejects me. And I'm yes! Oh, my God.
Yeah. So brave. And then, like, and what I really like was the emperor wasn't even, he wasn't even dismissive of it. He's like, he was completely standing the both of them.
Yeah, he was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, I ship that. Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes in the whole book is Kai saying to Mulan, according to the monks, it takes 500 years of karmic cultivation for two people to share a journey, 1,000 to share a pillow. If that's correct, we must already have at least 1,500 years of karmic ties between us. Oh my God, you horny boy.
You can just, like, really tell that he's like, okay, we got 1,500 years in there. Let's get it.
I know. Let's do it. Let's do it now. Oh, God, I love that line so much. It's genius writing.
I love him. I love him so much. I love how he's like, he kind of falls on to sayings. I've been amazed at, what are those called? What are those called?
Like, I don't know.
Like old sayings.
Oh, right.
As, like,
okay.
As kind of like how he feels, instead a way to not disguise but like kind of make it make her his horny feelings pretty. I would say I love him. It is such an unexpectedly YA. I didn't see this as YA at all. Like, it didn't.
I didn't either. Yeah.
I actually found out that she was 19, like, towards the end of the book. I was like, what?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I did not even. That didn't even pass me at all.
Yeah, exactly. She was towards the end, Baruta had her age.
Oh.
Yeah, but like, towards the in the beginning, it was like, oh, the rival person is a few years older than me. That one we know, right?
But yeah,
we didn't know her age, like for real, until the end. And I think that was a deliberate choice, because even though this book is categorized as YA genre, it doesn't really fit within the YA conventions.
Absolutely not. Because when I was reading it, it reminded me of the Poppy War. The way it was, like, one thing that I found difficult about Poppy War was that the war scenes or the plots of the enemies, etc., always just zooms past my head because there's so many things going on. And it was the same with this book, because I'm like, who's betraying who now? Because, like, so many things are happening at one go. Yeah, and, like, Poppy War is not meant to be a YA, even though the characters are teenagers.
Is it categorized as YA?
I don't think it is. I think they categorize it as fantasy.
I see. Maybe, like, this is categorized as YA because for marketing reasons. As in the
probably.
The cover is
cartoon. It's a drawing.
It's a drawing. Yeah. I don't know what they're called. Illustration.
Illustration. There we go.
Yeah, illustrations, very bright colors. And, like, that's not really something that you would find outside of YA. And, yeah. And I think it was a choice by the publisher, honestly.
Right. Yeah, because is the Lady Sherlock series YA, though? No, right?
Oh, no, that's not YA at all. That's, like, adult.
Yeah. Interesting. That's interesting. Because the whole time I was reading it, absolutely does not feel like a YA for me.
Yeah.
It felt like a romance book more than it does a YA.
That's why I love it so much. And I'm so glad that you...
I know. It was so unexpected. I really did not expect this to be the plot at all. And I really, really loved it.
I think after this, I'm going to read the other Sherry Thomas series where she, that one's romance, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the...
What is it called?
Don't know.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to click on it. I'm going to click on her.
Just read all the books. Read all the books.
All her backlogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Backlist, my bad. Oh, hold on. Elemental trilogy, I think? No. Private Arrangement, Hits at Night. Oh, she wrote a lot of books, yo.
I'm looking at the list too, and I'm like, which one are you talking about?
Which one has the sword in it?
Have you finished all of Lady Sherlock?
Yeah, I'm up to date.
Okay.
I love it.
I thought it was the Elemental trilogy because during our last recording, you were talking about this too.
Yeah, but I still don't know the name.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's not Elemental trilogy. Yeah.
Oh, it's about magic. Okay. I'm so excited. I'm so glad we read this book.
Same.
So happy.
Yeah.
Happy.
Happy.
Do you want to talk?
Oh, yeah. It's called The Hidden Blade. Fuck yeah.
Okay.
The Heart of Blade duology.
Oh, so it's a 2-book series then?
Mm-hmm. Seems like it.
Cool.
Yeah. Wait. Our book club pick for February is The Fisherman King by Bruneian author Katrina Mamadaud.
Mm.
Yeah, I have a borrowed copy here and I have to return it soon, so I have to read it.
You know what I was wondering about last night?
Hmm.
I don't know if Kat is going to listen to this. I was wondering how come Kat didn't drop the Muhammad in her name.
I don't know either.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because a lot of people do drop the Muhammad or the Ahmad in their last name. So I thought, I was like, huh, I wonder why she made that decision.
Yeah. Huh. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Okay. Anyways, it's such a weird thought. I don't know. I just thought about it last night and I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited about this.
Me too.
We haven't read a Bruneian book. Yeah.
We haven't. Oh, yay. Our first Bruneian book. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And this has come like really well recommended.
Yes.
So.
And I'm very proud of it. Yeah. I'm proud of it even though I haven't read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm super excited. So that's our recording for this month. Thank you so much for listening. Please visit us at Book Club Haters on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and visit the mothership at Songket Alliance and songketalliance.com.
Okay, see you next month.
Bye.